More than 200,000 temporary foreign workers came to Canada last year, many as agricultural and domestic workers, but also for construction, service sector, and transportation jobs. The federal government says the temporary foreign worker program addresses short-term labor shortages, but many workers are in Canada for years. David Camfield is an associate professor in the Labor Studies program at the University of Manitoba. He's the author of Canadian Labor in Crisis, Reinventing the Workers' Movement, and the editor of New Socialist Web Scene. He joins me now in the studio. Welcome, David. So temporary foreign workers may be working in Canada for years or sometimes decades. How do their rights differ from other Canadian workers?
Well, the fundamental difference between temporary foreign workers of whatever kind and others is that they are not either permanent residents or citizens. And this is actually really important for people because when you don't have that permanent residency or citizenship, your status in the country is that much more precarious and people are much less likely to actually stand up for their rights. Because although legally temporary foreign workers have the same rights in the workplace as anybody else, when it comes to actually making the rights real, enforcing the rights, there's a big gap there. And of course, there are many different kinds of temporary foreign workers. I just want to say one thing about that. There are people who come on work visas, 1 or 2 year visas, which are they're capped at 4 years in the country and then they have to leave. That's the bulk of people who are working in Canada as temporary foreign workers. But there are also people who come under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program, which is what many people in Manitoba are more familiar with. And there you have people who come for less than a year at a time, 6 months or sometimes as long as 8 months, and they can come back year after year after year, but never stay through the year. And then you also have people who come under the Live-In Caregiver Program, which is a different kind of a temporary foreign worker program.
How does the worker-boss relationship differ because people are coming under a different program and are different than Canadian workers in that way?
Well, temporary foreign workers are... Again, it depends on the situation. If you're working on a farm in southern Manitoba, your situation is quite different from those temporary foreign workers who might be working in the tar sands, for example, or as healthcare aides. But people who are hoping to be able to come back, seasonal agricultural workers, people who are hoping to be able to come back the next year to work again, are going to be much less likely to actually challenge violations of their rights if they know what their rights are. So drawing the line around things like overtime, drawing the line around having a day off, around, if they're injured in the workplace, is that going to be reported the way all injuries in the workplace should be reported? Those kinds of things are much less likely to happen when workers have that insecurity, that precariousness of not being permanent residents or citizens. And so that's a major factor in the situation that affects temporary foreign workers.
Businesses recently, when there's been more attention on the program, have said that they need the program because there is a shortage of Canadian workers to take these jobs. Is there evidence that industries do need to hire temporary foreign workers?
Well, the first question is, are there really shortages? It depends on which angle you look at it. I think perhaps a more accurate way of summarizing the situation would be to say that there's a job training shortage rather than there's a shortage of workers. That is, employers will say there's a shortage if they can't find someone to do the work that they want done at the wage that they're prepared to offer. I think that's the crux of the issue. And of course, if you look at even mainstream economics, the response to not being able to find people who are willing to do the work at the wage you're willing to offer should be to raise the wage or somehow improve the conditions to attract more people. But of course, if employers have a way of getting that low cost, that cheap labor by bringing in temporary foreign workers, then there is a strong incentive for them to do that. There are all sorts of issues around particular kinds of jobs that employers have difficulty filling. Often it's the worst jobs. Sometimes in other countries people use the term 3D jobs, difficult, dirty, and dangerous. But more often the situation is employers having difficulty finding people willing to do the work at the wages that they're prepared to offer, and especially people who are willing to step in, who are able to step into the job without any training. And employers have been become less and less likely to want to invest the money in training people. So for employers who are looking to fill gaps in their labor force without having to provide training, without having to improve wages and working conditions, temporary foreign workers are appealing. So overall, I would say no, there's no significant shortfall. If you look at the number of unemployed people to job vacancies across the country, you know, there's not a situation where you have jobs going, you know, unfilled simply because there aren't people to do them, with perhaps the exception of small particular niches. So that all the talk about labor shortages is pretty problematic.
With a lot of benefits to businesses in terms of getting to pay lower wages, having worse conditions, or
absolutely, the temporary foreign worker program is fundamentally a drag on wages and working conditions in the country. In places where employers have been able to bring in temporary foreign workers, they have been able to avoid pressures to try to improve those things. And the fact that the temporary foreign worker program has become much more accessible to business, so many more different sectors are now employing temporary foreign workers. This has spread the problem, more broadly. Some people thought that, well, if the program was supposed to do what it says it's intended to do, then you would see a drastic reduction in the use of temporary foreign workers in the last couple of years, because we've had the major economic crisis, global economic crisis, starting with the recession of 2008-2009, but really dragging on. And it's actually not the case. There's still very widespread use of temporary foreign workers. So at the very end of 2012, there were 338,000 temporary foreign workers present in the country. And that, in fact, underestimates the number who worked in the country in 2012, because, of course, seasonal agricultural workers almost entirely, or if not entirely, out of the country in December. Plus, there were people who worked in the country and left before the end of 2012 in other fields. So we're talking probably something over 400,000 people. The up-to-date stats aren't out yet. But that's very significant. So there continues to be a large number of temporary foreign workers employed. It's clearly not about people being brought in at times when the unemployment rate is low or falling.
I wanted to ask you about a case in British Columbia where HD Mining hired Chinese temporary workers for the Murray River Coal Project. And these workers are being paid less than the rates for unionized miners in the province. You've been critical of the union's response to the workers. Can you talk about your concerns?
Yes. The issue here is the same kind of issue that arises whenever you find temporary foreign workers being brought in to undercut the wages and working conditions of people who are already working in Canada. And I think that the fundamental choice that unions face when this employers do this, and it's clear why they're doing it as a cheap labor move, is solidarity or exclusion. That is, do unions of workers who are citizens or permanent residents here reach out to these workers and try to work with them, or do they essentially attempt to push them out of the job market? And so just to use another example from British Columbia, back in 2006, I think it was, the Construction Specialized Workers Union in Vancouver actually reached out in a sort of solidaristic approach to Latin American workers, or rather the Latin American workers reached out to them, I think, who'd been brought in to work on the SkyTrain expansion that was being done as part of the preparation for the Olympics. And so these workers were being paid less than temporary workers brought in from Europe. They wanted to organize, and the union worked with them. And they actually had to go to court, but they actually won a significant victory for these Latin American workers. So that was a situation where the Canadian union was prepared to actually organize these workers. That's not the approach that the union took in relation to the Chinese miners. Rather than trying to develop an outreach program to try to help these people to organize to improve their wages and working conditions, the unions responded by essentially questioning whether these people should be in Canada in the first place. And this is, I think, really problematic because it ends up pitting workers who are permanent residents or citizens against these migrant workers, treating them as the enemy. And that may not be the way that it's actually said in press releases, but if you actually go to the ground level and look how it plays out, I think that's the problem. It tends to be pitting workers against each other.
Do you think unions' concerns are justified in terms of bringing more temporary foreign workers in if you leave aside the ones that are already here that could be organized? Because having temporary foreign workers here does depress wages in Canada and can make things more precarious for unionized and non-unionized workers.
Right. But the question is, will trying to exclude the temporary foreign workers end up improving the situation or not? And I think if we look at the history of immigration and work, we find that those kind of exclusionary responses don't really work. They don't end up actually improving the situation. I mean, you can carry this through to its logical conclusion. Should the borders of the country be closed to all temporary migration or to all migration? Look, for example, at the Great Depression, when the borders were virtually impossible to cross. There was almost no immigration into the country. It didn't prevent employers from driving down wages and working conditions. And in fact, tying workers in Canada more towards nationalism is pointing in the wrong direction in a world that's increasingly globalized, where capital can move across borders, even if people can't move freely. The challenge is, how do we build stronger ties of solidarity across borders between workers, I think, and campaigning against migration, I think, cuts in the wrong direction rather than looking towards building international solidarity. I mean, it's really difficult. These are not easy questions. And, you know, you have to be able to talk to for example, the people who are Canadian citizens in BC who'd want to work in mines and who are denied the opportunity to work in those mining jobs. You have to talk to them. You can't, you know, simply stand on one side of the divide or the other. You have to address both groups of workers and to try to reject the employer attempts to divide and pit workers against each other by coming up with alternative demands for job creation. And I think actually, in the case of the coal mining situation, it's a challenge for the labor movement to integrate an ecological perspective, because coal mining is terrible ecologically in terms of the production of greenhouse gases. We don't need more coal. So unions need to be taking up a kind of a green job creation approach there, which, you know, actually tries to fight for meaningful jobs for people in rural or remote communities, where the mines are an attractive proposition for people. And that's challenging. But I think if we're thinking about not just being really reactive in the short term, it's important to think about these things.
What are the challenges you've talked about the workers in BC who are working on the transit line, but what are the challenges for unions or other activists in reaching out and trying to help organize with temporary foreign workers?
Yeah, so sometimes, for example, with seasonal agriculture workers, the workers are physically isolated from the urban centers, and there are not too many left activists who are doing this kind of work in rural communities. Some are, but there are language barriers, cultural barriers. There's fear on the part of the temporary foreign workers. People sometimes are, you know, they come as, again, to take the case of agricultural workers, they're coming, they're prepared to work incredibly hard for short periods of time, less than a year, in order to be able to take their wages back or send their wages back home. And they're prepared to accept terrible conditions because the conditions here are still better than the conditions back in their countries of origin. So you got to find a way of responding to that. There's the challenge of the active employer opposition to workers organizing. And we saw this in Manitoba, where there was a case of workers at one farm who successfully unionized migrant workers. But then these are Mexican workers, and the Mexican consulate and the employer, I think, together got workers subsequently to decertify the union. And so you have the challenge there of the, you know, the pressure coming from different sides on migrant workers. So, you know, these are difficult situations, absolutely. But that's why it's, I think, so important to try to have a long-term approach to organizing in solidarity with, and it's helping these workers to organize themselves. And there certainly have been cases of migrant workers, not just that case in Vancouver that I mentioned, but elsewhere, of migrant workers organizing themselves and occasionally even engaging in wildcat strikes to try to put pressure on their employers. And so it's incumbent on activists here to try to build those links.
I wanted to ask you about another case, and it was recently in the media, where RBC had hired 45 information technology jobs. I think they had outsourced them, and some of them were temporary foreign workers. And there was quite a response to that, and this seemed to prompt the federal government to act on the program. I was just wondering what your thoughts were and why there was a reaction to these types of jobs, which are more, probably more white-collar or office-type jobs rather than the other types of temporary foreign workers.
Yeah, I should just say one thing about the RBC case is that although it was reported as being temporary foreign worker program workers, my understanding is really that there's another stream called intercompany transfer, which allows people, allows companies to transfer workers between locations, and that was the particular program that was involved. But why did it get such a big focus? Well, I think because these were not people working on farms, for example. These are not people washing dishes. They're not people, you know, working in long-term care facilities or in the tar sands. These were the kind of workers who were supposed to be the face of the new economy. These were people in information services jobs. And so it, I think, was a lot more culturally mainstream, if you like, or these people were doing work that was higher status. And so I think that was the main reason it had this kind of resonance, the kind of industry, the fact it was located in a, you know, major urban center. And so there was a kind of more of a fit there, and then the media picked up on it, but it had a real resonance. I think you're right. I mean, it really struck a chord with people, because there's a lot of fear in a situation where unemployment remains where it is, and people who are employed find it increasingly difficult to find, you know, decent jobs. That the prospect of workers being brought in from another country to work here as a step towards the major multinational firm, then outsourcing the work out of the country, was seen as, you know, maybe a symbol of all that's wrong. You know, it's one thing to have jobs shipped overseas, but to have the gall of people being brought in to learn how to do it in Canada, I guess it just got up people's noses that much more. And so it did put the program and the Harper government under the spotlight, absolutely, and it's forced them to back off on temporarily on some changes that were made to the program. But I think the program still continues more or less full speed ahead.
And they had to back off a little bit on wages, the lower wages that businesses could pay.
That's right. There was this provision, was complicated, but it allowed people to be paid 15% less than, you know, what was the prevailing wage in Canada. And that's one of the things, along with the accelerated process for bringing in temporary foreign workers, that's been frozen while the Harper government investigates what it's going to do, so it says.
Well, thank you, David, for coming in today.
Well, thanks, and I really appreciate you taking the time to look at this kind of issue in depth.
I've been speaking with David Campfield. He's with the Labor Studies Department at University of Manitoba, and you're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.